You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday morning, March the 12th. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock, and this is our State Capitol Report. When we talk about the issues making news under the State Capitol Dome or involving state government with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson. And with you, if you would like to talk about issues before the state legislature or things you're reading about or hearing about with the state government, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We're going to talk quite a bit this hour, as well as after 7:30, about the Kenosha businessman who was indicted for skirting campaign finance laws. He's a big contributor to Governor Doyle's reelection campaign. His name, Dennis Troja. And a lot of the political fallout from that as well. The state's DOT secretary is up for a reconfirmation vote tomorrow, but Republicans are crying foul, saying postpone that. We need to talk to Frank Buzalaki about whether he acted inappropriately or not when he helped this businessman with a various matter. We'll talk with Sean about that as well. And Sean joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So let's talk a little bit more about this Dennis Troja affair that seems to be dominating the headlines and the buzz at the state capitol, is it not?
Yeah, and I mean it's not something necessarily that happened at the capitol last week, but just something that's stirring the talk from a series that the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has been running. It's a little complicated. I think you almost have to step back and kind of go back through a little timeline. You have Dennis Troja, is a Kenosha businessman who was recently indicted for allegedly skirting campaign finance laws in order to give Governor Jim Doyle more than he could under state law. Mm-hmm. Investigators allege he was doing that to try to get an Indian gaming compact. But you look at the indictment, and there's really no evidence that there was a two-way street as far as pay-to-play goes. That is, there's no allegations that the Doyle campaign or the Doyle administration promised anything in return.
Right.
So, you know, just have that as a kind of your baseline of knowledge, and then move forward to this this story last week about one of Troja's trucking companies and help that he got from the state in resolving tax bills. And the big question that these articles raise is whether the state was giving him an unusual amount of help in resolving these tax disputes with other states, or whether they were just going about their duties as they would with any other large trucking firm.
Yeah, so Frank Buzalaki, the DOT secretary, reportedly helped out Troja on this matter. And now Republicans don't want to vote tomorrow on his reconfirmation because they think there are too many unanswered questions.
Right. Buzalaki served as the governor's transportation secretary for the first 4 years, confirmed unanimously the first time around. His name was passed out of committee without any controversy this time around. That was before it was in the headlines. But now Republicans are saying that since these allegations have arisen, we want to have a public hearing on this and find out some information from Secretary Buzalaki before we go forward with the vote, or else, you know, we're not going to vote for him. That it's really up to Senate Democrats in this case as to whether that happens or whether he gets confirmed, because they hold majority in the Senate right now.
Yeah, and as far as you know, this this hearing vote is still on the agenda for tomorrow.
Yeah, not a hearing.
Okay,
but
it's just a vote.
Yeah, just a vote. So at this point, you would have a situation where senators would just have to be able to talk about it on the Senate floor. And normally these things are pretty quiet. They'll sometimes consider several names all together and just vote on them all at once without any debates. But I think you would expect if this vote on the Buzalaki nomination does go forward on the Senate floor, that Republicans are really going to sort of pound the desk and ask some questions that potentially embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about this issue with Mike McCabe from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign coming up after 7:30. But what has been the reaction of these government watchdog groups to this entire scandal, with quotes?
Well, you know, they're concerned. Mm-hmm. They don't like the way that the governor's office is handling it. The Department of Transportation did come out last week with a lot of information and sort of to try to get on the offensive on this and show that, you know, that they don't have anything to hide. But the governor hasn't been the most available. Now, granted, he's recovering from hip surgery,
oh, yeah.
And so should be, you know, given some leeway there. But you haven't heard much from him. So they've definitely some concerns raised. I'm sure Mike McCabe will put it better than
yeah,
I could.
All right. We will talk more about that after 7:30 with Mike McCabe. Maybe take a caller on this as well after the weather break, but also talk about some other issues making news, budget issues in the news. We'll talk about that with Sean after the break. We'll talk about a debate between the two candidates running for state Supreme Court. And I think we should also talk a little bit about the call to up the minimum wage that came last week as well after this break. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, March the 12th. And this is the State Capitol Report, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about issues making news in the state capitol. And we have a caller who wants to talk about this Troja issue. George in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I think it's this whole business about Doyle's accepting the donations from Troja really does indicate the need that we have to have full public campaign financing. But I want to just point to an issue that the media really has not looked at, and that is the amount of money that Troy has given to Paul Ryan, the congressman from the first. I saw in the paper that Ryan received over $50,000 from Troy and his family. Now, that's Ryan represents 1/8 of the state. So, if that were like prorated to what Doyle was getting, which is supposed to be $100,000, you know, that would be the equivalent of $400,000, and yet Paul Ryan seems to be escaping this without much notice. And Troja, Ryan did say yes. Well, he did call the Bureau of Indian Affairs to speak to somebody about this situation. Come on, he's in on this too. And I want the media to start focusing on him as well as Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Is the media not mentioning Ryan's connection, Sean Johnson?
Oops,
I don't have your microphone on. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, his name has come up, but certainly not as much as the governor's. Troja's attorney also pointed out that he's given money to other Republicans in the past, Tommy Thompson, George W. Bush. I think the reason you're not seeing those names as prominently is they're not specifically spelled out in this indictment. And, I mean, Troja gave more than the $100,000 that's mentioned in the indictment to Doyle, but those are the donations in question. And, I mean, those are just what investigators are focusing on.
Yeah, the indictment is that he gave too much money to the Doyle campaign, not whether he gave any money to the Ryan campaign.
Right, and I mean, the indictment also goes a step further and says that he did this for a purpose, to get this compact. So, I mean, that's where the focus is coming on, but, mm-hmm. I mean, the caller is right. This money has gone to Republicans as well.
Yeah, and I have here the article that George saw in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where Ryan is saying that the recent indictments surrounding the Troja family contributions to another campaign are very troubling. I am anxious to learn the results of this investigation, and if any contribution to the Ryan for Congress campaign is found to be legally in question, I will take the appropriate and corrective action. So Ryan, I guess, promising not to keep any money that was not a legal contribution. Governor Doyle has said something similar, hasn't he?
Yeah, the governor said that if he'll watch this play out in a court of law, and if any of this found to be illegal, he'll give it back. That referring specifically to the $100,000 that's in question here. Not referring to other money that Troja has given the governor, but is not being questioned under this indictment.
George, thanks for the call, and we'll talk to Mike McCabe about your call for full public financing of campaigns as one remedy to this after 7:30. Sean, one of the other, maybe it's a fallout of this Dennis Troja affair, is that Republicans have renewed their call to have a say in Indian compacts, in Indian gaming compacts. Right now, the governor can negotiate these, and the legislature, at least Republicans in the legislature, want to have a say in this too.
Right, and these are off-reservation gaming compacts. And it's a bill that they brought up before, and you know, chances are they would have brought it up whether this Troja indictment would have come up or not. But the timing kind of works well for them. They want the legislature to be able to have a say with the governor, sort of balance each other out in who gets these off-reservation gaming compacts. Right now, after it goes to the federal government, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, goes back to the governor, who has final say up or down on these things, and the legislature says, you know, we should be able to balance that power. These are huge businesses, and it's a big deal. We should have a seat at the table. The governor's response when he's vetoed this proposal in the past has been having 132 people sitting down at the table to negotiate a compact would just be chaos. And that seems to be the approach that Senate Democrats are taking already. So, you know, might be something the governor doesn't have to veto again if Senate Democrats share his views on this one.
Well, we should move on to some other issues, too. I know, Sean, that you covered a debate between the two candidates for state Supreme Court justice Friday night before the state bar of Wisconsin. And during that debate, Madison attorney Linda Clifford criticized her opponent, Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler, for not recusing herself in cases involving the West Bend Savings Bank, where Ziegler's husband is on the board of directors.
I guess the question should be asked today, and we shouldn't really leave today without an answer, whether Judge Ziegler didn't know about the rule or knew about it and simply ignored it, because that request has been made. That question has been raised and never answered. And in future cases, will she recuse herself from matters that involve West Bend Savings Bank or other situations that arise in a similar context?
And Ziegler responded that she did not stand to gain financially from the cases in question.
I was elected to serve the people of Washington County as a judge, and that's exactly what I do. I don't think it's my job to try to find a way to get out of cases, and if anything, I err on the side of doing work, not trying to get out of it. I have been fair and have no possibility of financial gain in any of the cases. I welcome and encourage any objective review of those cases. In fact, it'd be a welcome review instead of the investigator that has come from Attorney Clifford's campaign.
Yeah. So, Sean, how is this issue likely to play out in this campaign? I mean, it is a judge is, according to the Code of Ethics, supposed to notify parties before him or her that if there's a possible conflict of interest, and she Ziegler did not.
Right, and you know, as I understand it, it's not whether she stood to gain financially from it; it's whether there was this. A conflict of interest. And so she spent much of last week kind of defending herself, saying that she told the Wisconsin State Journal that did the initial investigation that she used a gut check in these cases. And she mentioned in several forums and in Friday's debate that she's been a good judge, a fair judge. And this was brought up several times during the debate. Linda Clifford wasted no time getting on it. And, you know, Judge Ziegler's kept saying that she'd been a good judge and never stood to gain financially. So I think this is going to be a recurring debate you're going to hear between now and the election.
Didn't Judge Ziegler then try to turn the tables, though, too, and question whether Linda Clifford's husband, who's a trial lawyer, would pose problems for Clifford should she be elected?
Right. I mean, she said, listen, how are you going to sit on the Supreme Court when a case comes up on, you know, lead paint liability or punitive damages or medical malpractice where your husband stands to potentially benefit from the precedent we set? You know, if we make it easier, if the court makes it easier to sue in these cases, your husband stands to benefit. And Linda Clifford responded to that a couple times. Once she said, you know, it just doesn't really bear a response. There's so many assumptions made there. But another time she mentioned that she'd worked hard to distinguish her career from her husband's. And, you know, the notion that some legal principle that comes to the court would make her, would force her to recuse herself is just trying to confuse the issue. And I think the difference here is that you have documented cases with Judge Ziegler where there are potential conflicts of interest. And here in this example she's trying to raise with Linda Clifford, they're more theoretical at this point.
Well, we will certainly follow that issue as well. I do believe I am scheduled to talk with a candidate, Clifford, on Wednesday at 7:30, and Judge Ziegler, candidate Ziegler, declined an opportunity to be interviewed and participate in a forum this week. So we'll talk more about that on Wednesday. We're running short of time, Sean, with our segment with you. This week, lots of budget hearings and state budget talk at the state capitol?
Yeah, if you want to find out something about the state budget, swing on by. There's agency briefings where each agency goes before the legislature's budget panel and just they talk about the budget pretty much all day long. And I think the big theme you're going to hear this week, or at least today when the Department of Administration swings by, is about the taxes and fees in Doyle's budget, which nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau said would be about $1.75 billion in the upcoming budget.
That's shocking, isn't it? $1.7 billion in taxes and fees?
And, you know, remember, a big part of this is the tobacco tax. That's the biggest chunk of it. And that includes all fees. It includes the higher registration fees. But, yeah, you're going to hear Republicans say that that is pretty shocking, especially from a governor who was claiming to, you know, wanting to hold the line on taxes a lot in his first term. And, you know, Doyle's office says that he's still doing that. These aren't general income or sales taxes. These are targeted at cigarette companies and big oil companies. But nonetheless, so you have a grand total here now, which is what's so nice about having the Fiscal Bureau at the Capitol. They can really cut through the partisan spin on these things.
Yeah, only about 45 seconds to go, less than 30 seconds, actually. Anything else this week or from last week that's worth noting that we should be following?
You know, senior care, alternative to Medicare Part D, the federal program, senior care is the state's prescription drug discount program. It's sort of a soap opera wondering, will the federal government allow that to continue or won't they? Because it generally saves seniors money. It's easier to do. And so just watch that as
that
unfolds.
We will. Thank you very much, Sean.
All right. Thanks,
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. We'll check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday, March the 12th, and this is our state capitol report. We will continue talking about the Governor Doyle being under fire for donations made to his reelection campaign, the indictment of a Kenosha businessman, Dennis Troha, for skirting campaign finance laws to donate more than he should have, allegedly, to the governor's campaign, and talking about some of the political fallout from that indictment. with Mike McCabe for this half hour, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Let me welcome in our guest, Mike McCabe, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what's the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign think about the indictment of Dennis Troha? What does that say to you? What's your reaction?
Well, it's another commentary on what's happened to the political culture in our state. It's certainly a black eye for the governor, and I think the way this scandal continues to grow and how the story continues to develop, is creating a dark cloud that's going to continue to hover over the governor for some time to come, and unless he starts to deal with this much more proactively.
Yeah, how do you want him to deal with it?
Well, I think first of all, he should just get rid of the Troha money for starters. It's obviously tainted money. He said that he wants to let the whole thing play out in a court of law, but in the meantime, all of this is playing out in the court of public opinion, and it just doesn't smell right, and everybody knows that, and it's making a big impression on the people of Wisconsin. So I think for starters, he's got to get rid of the Troha money. It's tainted money. Secondly, I think the administration has to come clean on exactly what the relationship has been. It seems like there's another story just about every day that shows a little bit more about what has transpired in this relationship between Troha and the administration. And then the governor needs to provide real leadership to clean up this mess and get at the root cause of the problem, get some campaign finance reforms seriously considered in this state so that we don't have this kind of activity and we don't have this kind of invitation to mischief and corruption in our state.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in just a bit. But the governor, as you says that he'll give back the money or do something. It won't keep the money if Troha is found guilty. You're saying he should do this before it plays out in the courts.
Oh, he should do this now. Mm-hmm. It's real obvious to people what Troha was thinking when he gave this money. He was after something. He obviously was part of an effort to get a Kenosha casino, an $800 million casino, and he stood to make something on the order of $88 million off this deal. And I think he felt like giving money to the governor, being a financial supporter of Doyle, would be a way that he might be able to get what he wants. But then we've heard much more since the indictment about the extent of the relationship between Troha and the administration. We've come to realize that the administration was sending state employees to other states to help try to get Troha out of some tax bills that he owes in other states, and sent a Department of Transportation employee to Pennsylvania and Illinois and three other states. And that's just something that state government doesn't do for your average citizen. And I think with the presence of the donations, the fact that Troha is the governor's single biggest campaign donor casts a very suspicious cloud over all of that. And that's the kind of thing that I think has just further corroded public confidence in the administration when day after day another story comes out that shows apparent favoritism toward Dennis Troha on the part of administration officials.
So you were referring to DOT Secretary Frank Buzalaki and the help that he provided Dennis Troha in this trucking firm tax issue in other states. But the DOT council is saying that there isn't anything inappropriate here. This is done. He's a businessman from Wisconsin with a transportation firm, and there's nothing inappropriate about the DOT secretary helping him.
Well, that's another part of this story, Joy. Bob Jamboys is the attorney, the Department of Transportation attorney that you talked about. Jamboys has said that this is all much ado about nothing. But then if you look at Jamboy's own background, he ran for a circuit court judge in Kenosha County. A third of his campaign donations came from Dennis Troja, members of the Troja family, and Troja Business Associates. Jamboy's wife was paid by Dennis Troja to run the 2004 referendum campaign pushing a Kenosha casino. Jamboy's wife is also a substantial donor to Governor Doyle. So,
goodness.
So here you've got this legal counsel, this attorney in the Department of Transportation, who was appointed to that position after DOT's attorney had been fired because he refused to put out a report that, or he refused to squelch a report that showed that using state employees to do engineering services was 18% cheaper than contracting it out to private businesses. He refused to sit on that report, and they fired him for it. They brought in Jamboys, who is up to his eyeballs in connections of his own to Dennis Troja.
Yeah.
So the fact that Jamboys is the lead voice here at DOT saying that this is all much ado about nothing when he's got his own substantial political and financial ties to this very individual, it doesn't exactly inspire public confidence.
So do you have a position on whether the state Senate should tomorrow vote or not on the reconfirmation of Frank Buzalaki at this time?
Oh, I think that's just plain dumb if the Senate goes forward with that confirmation vote. Given what's hanging over Frank Buzalaki, given Dennis Troja's indictment, and like I said, given the fact that that even the Department of Transportation's attorney, who's trying to clear the administration of any wrongdoing, has all kinds of ties to Troja himself, it just seems ridiculous to think that the Senate that this is the time to go forward with the vote on confirmation. I think that's a disastrous decision. This confirmation vote has been pending for a very long time. Why on earth the Senate can't wait a few weeks more to let this all sort out is beyond me.
We're going to check our weather forecast, and then we have a caller for you and an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. Talking with Mike McCabe, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, about the political fallout of this controversy involving a Kenosha businessman who has been indicted for allegedly violating campaign finance laws with his contributions to Governor Doyle's reelection campaign and related issues. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8, I'll welcome in Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader has a new book. It's called The 17 Traditions, and it's about the values that he learned growing up, the 17 traditions bestowed upon him by his parents and family and community. So we'll talk about that coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking with Mike McCabe for the rest of this hour, half hour. He is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, joining us for this edition of the State Capitol Report to talk about the issue that's making a lot of news in the State Capitol, that controversy, the scandal involving the indictment of a Kenosha businessman who allegedly violated campaign finance laws, donated too much to Governor Doyle's campaign. And we have Paul and Monona with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Mike, I appreciate the work you do, and I agree with everything you said. But if I was the Doyle administration, I would not say anything and do exactly what they're doing, and I'll tell you why. It's because if they do, they're kind of preemptively admitting that they're guilty of something. And I think that, you know, as you're going over the spending limits and who did what and who met with who, it gets very complicated. And I think what will happen is the upshot of it will be that everybody will say, well, this is very complicated. Everybody does this to get access to politicians, and they all collect money, and it's just all a terrible system. And and we'll move on. And I think we're, you know, what the public would really like is that people don't do anything quid pro quo. They don't, people don't get money to do political favors, but the way the system is now, you almost have to be there, you know, with a tape recorder or something to catch them in the act, because you're asking the guilty parties to almost admit that they did it. There's no way to, you know, prove their intent. So I think, you know, the real terrible thing is the law doesn't work. It can't work, really, to prove that issue. We can prove that they spent too much money and tinker around the edges of it, but we can't prove what we really want, you know, not to happen, which is that politicians get money from wealthy people to have access and to make laws that are favorable to them.
Mm-hmm. Mike McCabe?
Well, you know, I appreciate the caller's remarks, and I have to respectfully disagree, but I think the one thing that we could definitely agree on is that what the politicians really need to do is change the doggone system so that this kind of game isn't played in this way, and so that public confidence can be restored in the integrity of state government. But, you know, when Jack Abramoff, the Washington, D.C. lobbyist, got indicted, you know, of course, a lot of people started looking at their campaign accounts to see if they had Abramoff money. And, you know, some politicians hung on to that money until the very last second, and I think they took a bad beating in the court of public opinion as a result. Others, I think, acted much more proactively, and one example was Russ Feingold. He had one contribution from somebody who was from the same firm that Jack Abramoff once worked with, but wasn't working with when he committed all these crimes. Feingold got rid of that money because he didn't want even the possibility that somebody would think that maybe he was somehow indirectly, through all kinds of different, you know, degrees of separation, connected to Jack Abramoff. And I think that that's the kind of thing that politicians who are really sensitive to conflicts of interest and to the appearance of corruption in government, I think that's the sort of model that more politicians should emulate, where they just say, look, you know, I understand that appearances matter and that when people see something that they just think looks fouled up, politicians need to respond to that. And of course, it's going to play out in a court of law, and maybe Dennis Troha gets convicted and maybe he doesn't. But the bottom line is that people are reading every day about the nature of these relationships, what Dennis Troha seems to have gotten from this relationship. Everybody knows what he was really aiming to get, and that's a Kenosha casino. But this, all of this money game has a tremendously corrosive effect on the public's regard for politicians and the public's level of confidence in the integrity of the system. And I think politicians just have to be a lot more sensitive to that.
Yeah. And Mike McCabe, the indictment of Troha said, what, that he funneled these campaign contributions through his other family members so he could donate to the governor's campaign more than he could have as an individual?
Yeah. And it's essentially a money laundering charge. You know, the limit on campaign contributions is $10,000 to a candidate for governor, which is an awful lot of money, mm-hmm. by the way. But the Troha family was donating many times more than that. And what the indictment alleges is that Troha was furnishing money to members of his family to make those donations so that he could get around that $10,000 limit. And we've seen that pattern with other giving to other candidates as well. And in fact, I mentioned Bob Jambois, the DOT attorney who ran for Kenosha County Circuit Court. You know, the limit for circuit court judge contributions is $1,000, and yet the Trojas contributed more than $5,300 to that campaign. And it was the same sort of pattern. On the same day, a bunch of Troha family members would make big campaign contributions. And so we're seeing this pattern that appears to indicate that Troha was essentially using money laundering in order to get around state law that limits campaign contributions.
Yeah. And it does not, the indictment does not make any reference to, nor does it implicate Governor Doyle in any way of promising quid pro quo or some sort of play for the pay.
No, the indictment is solely focused on Dennis Troxa and the campaign contributions that he made. Now, there have been indications in news reports that the FBI is now interviewing administration officials about these stories of sending people off to other states to help deal with tax bills that Troxa had in other states. And so the investigation, I think, is broader than what is reflected in the indictment. But the indictment focuses on Dennis Troxa.
Yeah. We did have a caller in our previous half hour who was upset that, he didn't want to excuse Governor Doyle's campaign in this and thought it was certainly fair to discuss the whole situation when it came to Doyle, but was upset that Paul Ryan, the congressman from the 1st Congressional District, also took money from Troxa as a campaign contribution, and nobody's talking about him. You want to talk about him?
Well, you know, Troxa and his family members gave a lot of money to Paul Ryan as well. I think in excess of $50,000. And it was the same sort of pattern where contributions were being made by lots of members of the family, seven or eight different family members, and business associates and all that sort of thing. Now, one of the things that Ryan did that Doyle has not done that I think was aimed at trying to, to get this cloud to blow over more quickly is he initially, in the first days, insisted that the contributions were not a problem and even went so far as to say that his were different than Doyle because they were received at fundraising events rather than through the mail or by other means. I just was mystified as to why it matters how the checks were delivered. I think when he was beginning to experience the fallout from those early days of after Troxa's indictment, he wised up very quickly, and he got rid of the money. He gave it away.
Oh, he did, okay.
And I think that's one of the things that Ryan has done to try to deflect this issue or get the cloud to blow over more quickly is within a matter of days he just said I'm going to get rid of all of this money and I think that's the wise thing to do. Now I think a lot more needs to be done so that these sorts of problems aren't recurring problems. We got to reform the system, but I think the least that politicians can do is show that sensitivity. That they realize that appearances matter, and I think the governor's refusal to do that will harm him over the long haul.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you want to see. What, full public financing of campaigns so nobody's contributing money like this?
Well, I think the best thing we could do is have a system of voter owned elections and where you're getting money from all of the voters, where the entire general public has the financial stake in campaigns, so candidates aren't having to constantly turn to people for $10,000 donations and even more than that, and constantly having to shake down special interests and play this corrupt money game. The people will say, well, they don't want publicly financed elections. And I think people have to understand that we will always have publicly financed elections. We'll either do it directly through systems like those in place in states like Arizona and Maine, or we'll publicly finance elections indirectly with all the favors and tax breaks and pork barrel spending and no bid contracts that are doled out to big campaign contributors. The public will pay one way or another. And, I think we pay a much greater price, both in terms of our pocketbooks, but also in terms of the health and status of our democratic process when we allow a system to flourish like the one we've got right now. I just think we've got to do sweeping campaign finance reforms that put all of the taxpayers, all the voters back in charge and end this game of going after a few, this elite core of extraordinarily wealthy donors who end up not only owning our elections, but I think owning our government to an extent that is really offensive.
There have been a number of scandals in the past few years, and you and other government watchdog groups have said, you know, if not now, when? It still hasn't happened yet. Do you think this will be the straw that makes it happen?
I hope so, Joy. Mm-hmm. You know, when we had the caucus scandal and all the legislative leaders were being paraded into mm-hmm. courtrooms and eventually into jail cells, you heard a lot of legislators say, well, those were bad apples, you know, and the system worked. Those people were brought to justice and sent off to jail, and they deserved to go there. And they suggested that that sort of cleansed the system and solved the problem. Well, you see now that we're just going to have a continuing a series of investigations and indictments. You know, and yesterday, you know, it might have been Chuck Koala and Scott Jensen and Steve Foti, but eventually it starts to be, you know, the Dennis Troha mm-hmm. scandal. And it will be a series of these things unless we reform the system and get at the root cause of this problem.
And we'll leave it there for now and talk to you again. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Okay, thanks for having me, Joy.
Mike McCabe, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and earlier this hour talked to Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter, our two guests this week for the State Capitol Report. Let me let you know that We the People Wisconsin is sponsoring a debate between the two Supreme Court candidates on Friday, March the 30th, and there will be room in the studio audience here at Wisconsin Public Television for some people. If you register, 1-800-492-7505, the number to call to register for the We the People Wisconsin studio audience for the state Supreme Court candidate debate. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.